None of this applies to you who are sitting at the back.
Om Sahana Vavatu Sahanau Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavadhitamastu Mavid Vishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
So welcome back, everyone. The snow has not started yet. Thank you for coming in this real cold. And we'll begin with our, we're going to use this first verse as a, it's not a prayer, but just to remind us of the precious stones we are collecting through this text. You can listen and repeat.
Kakhalunalam kriyate, kakhalunalam kriyate, drishtar drishtartha sadhana patiyan, drishtar drishtartha sadhana patiyan, amuya kantasthitaya, amuya kantasthitaya, prashnotara ratnamalikaya.
And what we'll do every time we meet, we'll just recite the verses that we covered in the prior class, just kind of a, even though the text does not, the verses don't have like a connection, theme-wise connection, but it's just to refresh our minds. I'm pretty sure most of us don't have the time to go back and look at the verses once we leave here. So just a reminder for us.
Tvaritam kim kartavyam vidusham. Tam kim kartam vidusham. Samsara santati chedah. Kim mokshataror bijam. Samyak jnanam kriya siddham. Kah patyataraha dharmaha. Kah shuchiriha, kah shuchiriha, yasya manasam shuddham. Kah panditaha viveki. Kim visham avadhirana gurushu.
So we saw up to this verse last time. Kim visham, what is poison, avadhirana, disrespect, or not really regarding what the teacher or the guru is teaching. And we'll start with this today.
Kim samsare saram, kim samsare saram, bahushopi vichintyamanam idameva, bahushopi vichintyamanam idameva.
So saram, kim saram? Saram is essence or the real meaning. Real meaning what? Samsare, with regard to samsara. With regard, we saw in depth what different aspects of samsara in the prior class, this life of becoming or this life of strife. So what is the essence of this worldly life? And the answer is, in the second line, vichintyamanam. Chint means to think, vichintyamanam, meaning constant thinking or remembering or contemplating on what? Bahushaha, how many times? Bahushaha, many times, repeatedly. Idameva, on what? On this alone. This is kind of a cryptic answer. What does this indeed mean? So you want to be contemplating on the samsara. I think most of us don't need to be thinking of how miserable we are. We don't need to be reminding ourselves of how much we suffer. It's constantly being felt. So this cryptic answer, what is to be constantly remembered, not samsara per se, but samsara, which is the cause of stress, anxiety, fear of the three Ds. We saw last time what Swami Paramarthananda defined it. What is, and then thinking about the suffering isn't really going to help us, right? So we need to think about what is the seed we saw in this in a previous verse. What is the bijam for moksha, mokshataru, for the sprout of freedom? And we saw in verse 3, what is the solution for getting this moksha? Samsara santati cheda, cutting this flow of samsara. Before we get there, we first need to know what the root cause of our suffering is. If we don't know what is causing our suffering or what is causing our strife, how are we going to work towards a solution? It's like if you go to a doctor and you say you have a headache and the doctor says, samsara santati chedaha, chedaha, cut off the head. That's obviously not going to, you wouldn't want to go back to the doctor again. So when you have a headache, the doctor first has to find out what is the root cause of that headache before giving you a treatment. So that's what this verse, as I said before, this verse seems to imply that we have to be constantly thinking about our suffering, which would make us very depressed. But what it really implies is to be constantly reflecting on the transient nature of our suffering, the transient, impermanent, changing nature. So if you have a headache, okay, if you have a really bad migraine, you know, it might last a day, it might last a couple days. Is it going to last throughout your life? Probably not. You're going to have periods of, you know, migraine is quite a debilitating illness. You're going to have days when you won't have the headache. So just as the headache is impermanent, transient, samsara, our recognizing that anything that happens to our body and mind is transient and changing. And recognizing, reflecting on this transient nature of this world, our body and mind, on the mithya. Mithya is a technical term. We haven't looked at it yet in the text. We'll come to it later. Anything that is not as real as you, Atma. So we need to stop. So constantly reflecting on this transient nature of mithya will help us break our identification, will break our connection with the mithya. And then with these teachings, we can turn to identify with what is real, what is our essential nature. So both are required for lasting happiness. One, recognition of the problem, recognition, reflecting on the transientness of everything and anything that affects us, and then recognizing what the true source of our contentment is. Kim manujeshu ishtatamam, manujeshu ishtatamam, svaparihitaya udyatam janma. So kim ishtatamam, ishta means desired or wished, and the tama is an affix in Sanskrit, which is the most desired. What is the most desired? What is the most desirable goal? For whom? For manuja. Literally, for those Sanskrit students, the ja adds the context of born. So the one who is born from manu, and which simplified way just means for all human beings. So what is the most desirable goal for human beings? The answer is a little surprising. A janma, a life, which is udyatam. We saw this word udyatam in the second verse when it defined the guru, who is a guru, shishya hitaya udyatam satatam. Udyatam, constantly striving, constantly engaged, eager, active. And here, udyatam for what? Constantly striving for swaparahitaya, for the hita, for the benefit, welfare, of whom? Para, of others, and swa, of oneself. So very important to note that it doesn't say you should not strive for the benefit of yourself. Many people feel guilty, especially those who are spiritual, quote-unquote spiritual. They feel, oh, if I think about myself, then I'm being very worldly or I'm not being spiritual. This doesn't say that. It says you have to think about yourself, think about your welfare also, but it also includes para. So you have to be equally working towards the benefit of others. And one way for doing hita, for benefiting not only yourself and others, is by seva. This word seva means service or just help in general. This is a wonderful way to dedicate our life for the good of others. And others can be anybody, right? It can be your immediate family. It can be your extended family, friends, relatives, society, ashrams. Definitely, we need a lot of seva here. And it's important to reflect that the seva or service that we can do as human beings is really a blessing, because only humans are endowed with this capacity, with this choice of doing seva. Animals don't do seva. Of course, you know, you have these service dogs which do seva in their own way, but they don't have a choice. They're trained, right? Whereas human beings, we have this opportunity to use our free will to do good to others. And many times, common excuse many of us have given is for not being able to do seva is what? Exactly. I don't have the time. I don't have the time. In our busy lives, when will we get time to do seva? You know, many times people will think, oh, I'm too busy with my job, with taking care of family. When your kids are little, I have to drive my kids to their zillion activities. When they grow up, you want them to grow up so that they, you know, you don't have to be driving them around. And then you think, when my kids are out of the house. When the kids are out of the house, they're in college, I will have the time to do service. I will have the time to help others. Or when they get married, you're waiting for them to get married. What happens after they get married? Grandchildren. I know a lot of you are having new grandkids. Excellent. When will we get the time to do seva? If this is your excuse that I don't have the time to do seva, you might want to reflect on that. Are you fooling yourself? When will the time ever come? Time is the most precious commodity we have. And the only time we have is now. No idea the next second where they're going to have a heart attack and conk off. So the only time we have is now. So we can help others in whatever way we can. You know, there is no one particular way to do seva. You can, and I know many of you do this already, volunteer at a food bank or a soup kitchen, volunteer at a library, giving your time to maybe educating, teaching. You know, they have this teaching for literacy education in the U.S. that you can offer your time to teach English to non-English speaking people. You can make a phone call to somebody who is struggling, who you know is going through a hard time. You can visit the person if they are open to having you. Prepare a meal for somebody who's not well, offer a ride. And I want to plug in two programs that we offer at the ashram, the Janaraksha Community Care Program and the Sevak, which is mainly designed for our students from our ashram to offer their seva in this way. And another program we started fairly like 6 months back, I think, is the Arsha Parivar program, which is a group of volunteers who will go and visit people when they want at the time of need. Just, you know, this reminds me of a cartoon I saw many years back. Some of you might have seen it. There is this young little boy scout who's dragging an old woman across the street because, and she's screaming and saying he thinks it's seva. He thinks his job is to help her cross the street, and she's kicking and screaming. And I don't want to cross the street. I don't want to cross the street. So if somebody doesn't need your help, you don't need to offer it there. Offer it somewhere else. So just to recognize that. And many of you have heard Pooja Swamiji's statement of what helps us grow is from turning, growth is from turning from being a consumer to being a contributor. And you can contribute in any way that you are comfortable with. So sva para hitaya udyatam, so constantly striving to help others. And you know, two aspects of that. One, when you help others, how do you feel? However miserable you're feeling, there is somebody else who's probably more miserable than us. And to recognize that, when you help somebody else, do you feel more miserable or better? Most of us, all of us, I think, feel better when we help somebody else. So to recognize, so seva not only helps, seva by helping others not only helps others, but it helps us too come out of whatever doldrums, whatever slump we are in, just makes us feel good. Of course, that shouldn't be the goal, like the little Boy Scout wanting to earn his badges. You know, that shouldn't be the goal, not only to make you feel better, but it's really to help others and for our own growth. Madireva moha janakah kah, madireva moha janakah kah, snehah snehah kechadasyavah vishayah vishayah kah moha janakah. Janakaha, what gives birth, what gives rise to, what produces what? Moha, delusion, distraction, infatuation for people. Like what? Madira eva. Madira is a liquor or an intoxicant. So what gives rise to delusion or distraction like liquor? And the very small one-word answer is snehaha. Sneha, I know some of you have heard the name, maybe somebody's name Sneha here means in the Hindi sense of love and care. The first meaning in the dictionary of Sneha, it comes from the root Sneh. Sneh is to be sticky or to be adhesive. The second meaning is being attached to or being fond of. The stickiness implies blind obsession. So being blindly stuck figuratively to not only a person, but an object of our attraction. And the sneha, so many of us, you know, having infatuations as in our teenagers, pretty normal, though I don't know why Indian families think it's a big sin if your 12-year-old child is infatuated with another kid in school. Important thing is to recognize that infatuation will pass. Hopefully it will pass. If it doesn't pass as you turn into an adult, then maybe something to address there. Or many of you, if you've been in love growing up, or for those of you who've had an arranged marriage, don't know your spouse at all when you get married, in the early stages of your marriage, the quote-unquote honeymoon period, how did you feel when your lover or your loved one was not around? It was very almost like you were pining. All you could think about was your loved one, your misery, how much you suffered, how much you're suffering. You couldn't focus on anything. I'm thinking many of you might have had these experiences, but from your expressions, I don't know if this is completely a taboo thing for you. But if you have had, or you can imagine, the feeling of longing. A very, as we grow spiritually, longing, pining for God. And I hear some, many bhakti people, their one goal in life is to see God, to be in Mathura or Vrindavan in these celestial places, in the company of Krishna or Vishnu or Shiva. That kind of pining, and if you've had that, it's great. At least you're moving from something extremely temporary, like an object or a person, to a God who, remember, in Advaita Vedanta is as temporary as much as mithya. I'm not going to touch on that right now because we're not there yet. So the sticky kind of attachment is what sneha is. And some of you have heard Swamiji define what is the difference between attachment and love. Attachment is the stickiness, this sticky sense that our happiness depends on the other person or on the other object. When we think we are not happy, we cannot be happy before acquiring, without acquiring that object or the person, that is attachment, versus love. Love is not being attached in that sticky way. Love is giving. Love is seva. Love is compassion. So that's a big difference between being in love and being attached. And this is seen in the first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna sorrow, Arjuna Vishada Yoga. So Arjuna was in a bad shape. He was having an emotional breakdown. Do you think it was because of his love for his teachers, his Dronacharya, Bhishma, his great-grand uncle? Was it because of the love that he was so much in love with them, so much in love that he didn't want to hurt them? Or was it attachment? Because his confused mind, in chapter one, made him think that his happiness dependent on all these external factors. So Arjuna's sorrow, and then the remaining 17 chapters, Krishna explains to Arjuna what this love versus attachment is, and Arjuna is able to flip. So that is sneha. What is delusion is this stickiness, adhesiveness. And kecha dasyavaha, and what is dasyavaha? Dasya is a thief. Dasyava is a thief. So a thief is somebody who takes something from you without your permission. And the answer for that is vishayaha. Vishaya is an object, and here specifically a sense object. We have five senses. Anything we can see with our eyes, perceive, see, touch, hear, taste, and smell. So any object that we can perceive with our five senses, those are the thieves. And why are they called the thieves? And this is explained. So how do our five senses rob us? How do the five senses become thieves for us? And this many of you have seen before in the Bhagavad Gita chapter 2. 62 and 63 verses explains the process of how these objects, external objects, which trigger our senses, become thieves for us. And we can chant it. I love this verse, and we can chant it together. Dhyayato vishayan pumsaha, dhyayato vishayan pumsaha, sangasteshu pajayate. Sangasteshu pajayate, Sangat sanjayate kamaha. Sangat sanjayate kamaha. Kamat krodho bhijayate. Kamat krodho bhijayate. Krodhat bhavati sammohaha. Krodhat bhavati sammohaha. Sammohat smriti vibhramaha. Sammohat smriti vibhramaha. Smriti bhramshad buddhi nashaha. Smriti bhramshad buddhi nashaha. Buddhi nashad pranashyati. Buddhi nashad pranashyati. So this is the pathway of, or as Swamiji calls it, the slippery slope of how our sense, our senses lead us down the slope. Pumsaha, a person, dhyayataha, thinking on what? Vishayan, vishayaha, the objects, which we saw in the verse in this text. What happens to, so these objects are anything we perceive through our five senses, like a new car or a new gadget that is advertised on the TV as the best and greatest, or anything we can touch, especially in this cold weather, if you can feel some very soft fabric or piece of clothing, you see that or you touch that, you get, your senses get attracted. Anything we can hear, music or even a class, even a spiritual class or a lecture can become a distraction if we are not, can become an obsession if we are not careful about our senses. Anything we can taste, I don't need to tell, all of us have our tastes and our favorite foods. Anything we can smell, when this nice palak paneer is being cooked in the kitchen, and you get the, if that is your favorite dish, you can, that attracts you. So vishayan, any object doesn't restrict vishaya, even though technically it means sense object. A pet is an object, a person is an object. So anything that we perceive as a distraction, sangaha, we get associated, we get connected, we get addicted or devoted to, we desire it. So what happens? Teshu upajayate. So we get desire after seeing something, perceiving something, we get a desire arises towards these. What happens? Sangat sanjayate kama. Out of this desire, what happens? Kama arises. Thinking on the object, kama arises, desire arises, and out of kama, kamat krodha abhijayate. So from this desire, anger arises. Why should you get angry with a desire? A desire is a desire. It's a mental event. Why would we get angry? If a desire is fulfilled, if you get that car you've been dreaming about, is there any anger? No. Or if you get that palak paneer that you've been craving for, you're happy. But what happens if the desire is unfulfilled? You don't have the money to buy the car, or you don't have the means to, you don't know how to make palak paneer, then you're going to, a little bit of anger there arises. Krodhat bhavati sammohaha. From anger, what arises? Sammohaha, delusion. Delusion, moha or sammoha, delusion, which means our values are lost. And sammohat smriti vibhramaha. Out of sammoha, our smriti, our intellect is overpowered. We no longer, when we are so obsessed with having a desire fulfilled, we are willing to cut corners, our values are lost, we are willing to do adharma, our intellect is overpowered or overshadowed, and smriti bhramshad buddhi nasha. Our discernment, our capacity to know the right from wrong is completely overpowered, is completely overshadowed. And then what happens? Buddhi nashat pranishyati. With that intellect being destroyed, we are no longer able to lead a meaningful, dharmic, peaceful life because our minds and intellects are overtaken by these vishayaha, by these objects of our senses. So what is the solution? Keep your eyes closed 24/7. Keep your ears closed 24/7. Of course, I'm being silly. How can we not, how can we live without using our senses? It's not at all possible. Short-term solution, there are two solutions, short-term solution and an ultimate solution. Short-term solution is to first recognize the problem. Like in the earlier verse we saw, if you have a headache, you have to first recognize that there is a headache. What are the objects, pets, peoples, things that distract you, that have the potential to lead you down the slippery slope? And one way to, you can contemplate on that, make a list of it. You know, what are the things that you are obsessed with, that you're constantly thinking about, constantly wanting to have? And a way to short-term overcome that is to see, is something called dosha darshana, is to see the defects in the acquisition of this impermanent, temporary object. And it's important to know, you know, the very first thought that comes into our mind towards an object is really not under our control. It comes from a whole bunch of samskaras, prior conditioning. But once a thought comes, once we become aware that a thought has come into our mind, we have the capacity to shape its direction. We have the choice to decide how that thought can proceed. We can nip it in the bud if it's a thought that is not good for our growth. If it's a thought, if you get a thought of, hey, I have to do seva, go for it. Then pursue that thought. So those are, that's a short-term solution. The ultimate solution, obviously, is to, with the proper understanding of these Vedantic teachings, we can recognize, come to recognize that the true source of our happiness is not going to come from fulfilling a desire that is outside. The true source of happiness is already within. So for, as a homework exercise, you can think, go back, when you go back, think about one trigger for you that can lead you down the slippery slope. And see if you can look at the defects, the doshas, by pursuing the fulfillment of that desire. And I think you can learn a lot about yourself and about your, how your mind works when presented with worldly objects. Ka bhava valli Trishna, Trishna. Ko vairi yahtu anudyogaha, yahtu anudyogaha. So bhavavalli, valli means a creeper or a vine. Ka bhavavalli, what is the creeper of becoming, of this life of samsara? And the answer he gives is trishna. Trishna literally means thirst, but we can extend it to mean desire or a wish. A wish for these vishayaha, objects of enjoyment. And desire is compared to a valli, a creeper or vine. If you see creepers grow, we have some master gardeners here. How do they grow? They just get entangled. They entwine themselves with the main plant or whatever support you're given. So our desires are like that. Our desires of our sense objects are compared to this vines, which enmesh us, entangle us in a life of striving, in a life of constantly seeking happiness outside. And what is the solution? Trishna, thirst. Thirst, if you take the literal meaning of thirst, as Trishna as thirst, there are two types of thirst. One which is a quenchable thirst. When you're thirsty, you drink water, you can quench your thirst. You drink lots of water, you can quench your thirst. versus unquenchable thirst. This unquenchable thirst, no matter how much water you drink, perhaps due to some underlying disease, and I know there are medical conditions where you have some kidney problems or diabetes where people drink water and they're still constantly feeling thirsty. So this unquenchable thirst is like is compared to samsara. Not knowing the true source of happiness is within you. You keep on trying, I'm mixing metaphors, keep on drinking from fulfilling these objects of desires from outside, from people, from objects. And when will fulfilling our desires give us, quench our thirst completely? It's never going to happen. Only when we recognize our true nature can this thirst be quenched. And kaha vairi, who or what is vairi? Vairi means an enemy in this sense. What is counterproductive to our growth? What is counterproductive to our spiritual growth? And the answer he gives is anudyogaha. Udyogaha means exertion, perseverance, continuous endeavor, continuous striving, doing what is to be done, being engaged. And anudyogaha is the opposite of that, meaning not even trying. You know, somebody can, many times, students who have not understood what Advaita Vedanta really is teaching say, oh, I don't have to do anything to get enlightened because I am already enlightened. I am muktaha, sada muktaha. And don't do anything. Obviously, that's a misrepresentation of what the teachings are. You have to do shravana, you have to do manana, you have to do nididhyasana. So there is constant engagement, constant trying, constant endeavor. And there is a cliche that you all have heard, an idle mind is a devil's workshop. So when you're not striving for spiritual growth, what is your mind doing? Sit back and watch it. Most of the time, I think nowadays, we don't even get time to watch our mind. When we have a few minutes, when we don't have to do anything, what are we doing? Yeah, she's doing it correctly, picking that up, and that's the phone. In the Mahabharata, there is, we spoke about the shad doshaha, the six defects, or the six blemishes. In Mahabharata, there's a verse that describes this. Shad doshaha purushena iha hatavyaha bhutim ichchata. Shad doshaha, six defects or faults or blemishes, hatavyaha, are to be abandoned, are to be given up. By whom? Purushena, by a person, iha meaning in this world, ichchata, one who is desiring of what? Bhutim here means prosperity, growth, success, even in worldly life. You know, if we just bum around doing nothing, are we going to have success in our worldly life? We cannot grow not only materialistic, not only spiritually, but even in the materialistic sense. So what are the six doshas? Nidra is sleep, excessive sleep. Of course, many of us suffer from the opposite of having sleep deprivation. That is also a dosha in some sense. If you're not getting enough sleep, and I know lives are busy, we have things to do for 27 hours in the day, which is obviously never going to happen, but sleep is very important. If we don't get proper sleep, we're not going to be able to do all the things we need for spiritual growth. Tandra means exhaustion, sleepiness, sluggishness, lethargy. It's like if you're not used to sleeping in the afternoon and one day you take a nap in the afternoon and you wake up, you're just like worse off than, at least it happens to me if I ever do that. It's worse off when you get out of that, you feel lethargic. bhayam, fear. You can put your fill in your noun or adjective fear of --, whatever you fear. Krodaha, anger. Alasyam. Alasyam, you know, in Hindi, Marathi, I think alasya means laziness. Here you can translate it as idleness or sloth. That's the dictionary meaning. And I think of these, you know, these tree-dwelling creatures called sloths. They're very cute looking, but they're just so slow. And I think they eat everything. They have to move very... I think that's just part of their metabolism. They are very slow creatures, so it's... Imagine if you're not motivated, feeling motivated to do something that needs to be done, imagine, picture yourself as a sloth and then think, do you want to be a sloth for the rest of your life? And then dirgha sutrata. Dirgha is long. Sutra means string. The ta affix makes it a state of being a long string. What does that mean? It means being a procrastination. And there are many reasons. Why do we procrastinate? Why do we put off things that need to be done? Several reasons. We don't like what needs to be done. And I know one example comes to mind for me is taxes. We have to do them, but we put them off till the last day or even file for an extension. Perhaps we don't know how to do what needs to be done. If you have to learn some complicated technical thing for work, all of us have a learning curve, so we kind of put that off. Perhaps we are lazy and we think, hey, somebody else, and this happens in the home situation, in the family situation, somebody else will take care of the laundry, somebody else will take care of the cleaning. We may not know how to prioritize what is important in our life, prioritize our time. And it's really sad. Time, I said, is our most precious commodity. And are we ever taught growing up how to manage our time? I don't think they teach it in schools. I don't know now if they do. I was growing up, it's something you kind of have to pick up on your own. And what if you don't know, or you don't have a role model, or you don't have mentors to help you figure out how to manage your time? You end up procrastinating. Procrastination can also be for people who are on the autism spectrum. That apparently is a sign for somebody who procrastinates. And a bigger, a more important aspect for us to reflect on, perhaps we don't have clarity for what our goals in life is. So when you don't have clarity on what you want to do, you're not going to do it, right? If you don't have clarity, if you don't know what you want out of life, or you don't know where you want your life to be heading, you might be procrastinating not only on worldly matters, but on spiritual matters, on growing, learning and growing. So these are the shad doshas that are talked about in the Mahabharata. kasmad bhayam iha maranat andhat iha ko vishishyate ragi. So kasmad bhayam iha. Kasmat, from what is there bhayam, fear? Here, you know, again refers to for us, for humans. And the one word answer, maranat, from fear. We spoke about this in the last class or the prior class, the constant stress, anxiety, strife. One of them is fear from death. And it's there is a, in the Mahabharata, in the Yaksha Prashna portion of the Mahabharata, I didn't take down the verse number. Yaksha, who's a celestial being, asked Yudhishthira, kim ascharyam, what is most surprising? What is the most surprising thing? And Yudhishthira answers, ahani ahani bhutani gacchanti yamalayam. Ahani ahani. Ahni means day. So daily, every single moment, bhutani, humans or beings, gacchanti, are going. Are going where? Yamalayam, to the alayam, abode of Yama. Yama is considered the god of death. It's a euphemistic way, like here we say kick the bucket. It's a euphemistic way to say every day, every minute, people are dying. Actually, I don't understand the kick the bucket metaphor. I was thinking yesterday, what if somebody is kicking the bucket and at that moment he has a heart attack and dies? So at that time we can use, he's literally kicked the bucket. But I don't, it's just a pleasant way, I think. I don't understand the metaphor, but if anybody has clarity, you can enlighten me or why that came about. So every moment people are dying, Sheshaha, the remainder, Sthavaram Ichanti, desire, wish to remain, meaning wish to continue to live. Kim Ascharyam Mataha Param, what is more surprising, what is more shocking than this? So there are, even though we see people dying and we know people dying every moment, yet we want to continue to live. What is more, I would add, foolish than that? And this fear from death is not only for ourselves, but, you know, fear of the loss of loved ones. And why is there a fear from death? Because we don't know. It's an unknown factor to us, so we fear death. But the fundamental cause of fear, there are two. One is non-acceptance of a fact. Non-acceptance that anything that is born, which is our body, mind, senses, body, mind, senses of our loved ones, body, mind, senses of our pets, anything that comes into being, anything that is born, is subject to die. That is just a fact. If you say, no, I don't accept that, how is that helping you overcome the fear of death? So recognizing that whatever is born is subject to death. And the second important fact is not recognizing, second important reason why we fear death is not recognizing that essential true nature that we all are, which is not subject to death, which is not going to perish, which is Atma. So these are the acceptance of a fact, and that's really being objective. And I know, you know, when we lose a loved one who's lived a long time, so perhaps we are more accepting of that. He or she has lived their age and they've gone, and it's time for them to go. But when it comes to a younger person, a child, it's a horrible loss, but not accepting that loss, that death is inevitable. Hopefully, it'll come. Death will come when it will come. None of us know whether we are going, when we are going to die, right? So accepting that death is an inevitable for anything that is born is a first step to not have this fear from death. And kaha vishishyate iha, who is, vishishya means to be characterized or distinguished, or here it really means what is, kaha vishishyate iha andhat, what is more blind, more criticized, more characterized than somebody who's blind. That is, even though one who is more blind than somebody who doesn't really have eyesight. And the answer is ragi. Ragi means the one who has ragas, who has desires. All of us have desires, but here ragi can imply one who does not know how to handle his or her desires and goes down that slippery slope, as we saw earlier. One more verse. kah shurah kah shurah yo lalana lochana banaihi yo lalana lochana banaihi nacha vyaditah nacha vyaditah. So kah shurah, shura means brave. Who is brave? And you like this answer is cute. Yaha lalana lochana banaihi na vyaditah. Lalana, so that compound word, lalana alochana banaihi. Lalana means sporting or playing, and the dictionary actually says moving the tongue to and fro, like making clicking noises. Alochana means seeing or perceiving. And by extension, you could take it as fluttering of the eyelashes, flirting. And I think of these animation characters like Mickey Mouse and Minnie Mouse, you know, when they are falling in love, you have these exaggerated eyelashes that Minnie Mouse has, and she's fluttering it to attract Mickey Mouse's attention. So here he says, yaha lalana alochana banaihi na vyadita. Yaha vyaditaha, the one, na vyadita, the one who is not pierced. Pierced by what? Banaihi, by the arrows. Arrows of what? Lalana alochana. And the translation says, arrow-like glances of amorous women, of flirtatious women. I know some women are going to take offense at that. Remember the time when this text was written. It was a male-dominated society. The time, the society itself was male-dominated. But, you know, even in today's times, women get a bad rap as being flirtatious, the one who are flirtatious. But how about men? You know, men, quote-unquote, are flirtatious in their own way. In the same animation, you think Mickey Mouse is not going to try and attract Minnie Mouse by doing whatever he does. Or if you take, go to a gym, if you've seen in a gym, I've seen this in a screen, you know, you have these men doing, especially if there's a woman in the gym, they will, younger men, of course, hopefully, they will lift extra weights more than they can manage, or they will flex their muscles or show off their six-pack abs. All this is flirtation. So even though the verse is talking about women, we can extend it to men. So who is brave? Who is the shuraha? The one who is not confused or who is not won over by his or her own desires towards all these flirtatious activities. What it really implies is one who has his or her senses in under control, being steadfast, not being carried away, again, by these external objects of senses, not going down the slippery path. You call it love, lust, attachment. Attachment to anything, attachment to anyone. So that is the one who is brave, is the one who is not swayed by these external objects. And we'll conclude our class there. Om sarve bhavantu sukhinah, sarve santu niramayah, sarve bhadrani pashyantu, ma kaschit dukha bhag bhavet, asato ma sadgamaya, tamaso ma jyotirgamaya, mrityor ma amrutangamaya. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om. Thank you all for coming. We'll have meditation in a few minutes.